Welcome to Loud and Clear, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of women in music. I'm your host, Olivia Adams, and welcome to our series called YXC Divas, the artistic voices behind the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra's upcoming show. As part of this series, I'm interviewing each of the solo artists featured in this show, and we are releasing episodes as a lead up to the big event. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to chat with singer-songwriter Eileen Laverty. Originally from Belfast, Northern Ireland, Eileen's family emigrated to Canada when she was six, and while she calls herself a prairie girl, her Irish roots run deep. With the heart of a storyteller and a poet, her deeply intimate and stirring vocals, and her slightly Celtic-influenced songwriting leave you with a sense of hope. Eileen's musical adventures began with a traditional Celtic band in her hometown of Saskatoon. It wasn't long before she set out on her own, performing solo in folk clubs and taverns with a set list of Irish ballads and a few pop covers and a clutch of original songs. Over the past few decades, Laverty has entertained audiences of all ages as a solo performer and with her band. Eileen's track record includes several songwriting accolades and numerous radio and television appearances. A look at the acts she's supported will underscore her universal appeal. The late country legend Kenny Rogers, rocker Tom Cochran, Irish star Mary Black, Canadian tenor John McDermott, and folk icon Ian Tyson. More recently, Eileen has been focused on a few special collaborative projects, including debuting new music with the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra and performing with the Saskatoon Jazz Orchestra. She wrote music for Daniel MacDonald's new play, Blow Wind, and then took leave from her teaching career to perform the premiere run. In early 2019, Eileen released Close to Home, a song commissioned to support St. Paul's Hospital Foundation's hospice campaign, and in 2020 released The River, inspired by her adventures paddling in northern Saskatchewan. It is her natural ability to speak honestly through her songs. You can't help but love the experience, wrote Mark Turner, our SSO CEO. Eileen is also a dedicated teacher and coach and a lifelong fan of the beautiful game, still playing when her schedule permits. She loves the outdoors, and many of her songs were composed in and around the forests and rivers of Saskatchewan. I have been so excited to bring this interview to you. I so enjoyed talking with Eileen. I've heard her play in concert in several settings with jazz orchestras, with the SSO, and also just with her own band. And her music really spoke to me at a pivotal time in my life, and it just had a beautiful influence on me. And you'll hear me fangirl a little bit in this episode, but she is just a lovely soul to talk to. And I hope that you enjoy this interview with singer-songwriter Eileen Laverty. Welcome. How are you doing, Eileen?
Oh, I'm very well, Olivia. Pleasure to be with you today.
I'm so excited to chat with you. I like to start all of my interviews with the same question, and that is, can you let us know what led you down the path of wanting to be a musician?
That's actually a funny and convoluted story, but I mean, I've always been a singer since I was little, but very shy, like so. Music's always been in the background, but my life goal was to be a professional soccer player. And so I kind of came by music in terms of professionally. Oh, let me back up a second. So my uncle Desmond is very involved with the Irish, the Cultus Celtori Éireann, which is an organization worldwide that promotes the culture and the music and the language of Ireland. That is my background, of yes. course. Born in Belfast. And so my uncle Desi taught me to play the guitar and then he started the Cultus, the Clada branch here in Saskatoon where I live. When he lived here, he started the local Clada branch of the Cultus and took me to a few sessions and kind of got me in that way where I met other musicians who I eventually formed a band with many years ago. So my start was through Celtic music and Irish traditional folk music for sure.
Amazing. And part of your music journey is that you are of course, a poet and a singer-songwriter. Can you talk about the creative process when you're writing a new song? What does that look like for you? Does it look different for every song? Or do you have sort of rituals that get you into the headspace to be able to write music? Or what does that practice look like?
I know that it should be a daily ritual. It should be I should get up and journal and write and force myself. And I'm afraid to say I tend to wait for the muses, but I can tell the muses are knocking through those rituals that you speak of, like I can tell by what I'm listening to when I start to listen to the singer-songwriter, the storytellers, reading poetry, art galleries. I find art very inspiring. Mm-hmm. And I've been, for years, been very interested in how art inspires other art. I find that, you know, paintings that are based on songs or songs that are based on stories. And so I find that very interesting. But my own ritual, I think, is to get away from the hustle bustle and the routines of daily life and kind of sequester myself and lock myself away with books, poetry, my guitar, old lyrics, bits and pieces of paper, you know, that I've jotted something down on. But I can also say too that that process only comes after being out amongst people. Like, it's, I think, to try to be creative within just four white walls, you know, is very difficult. You need to tap into something and find a story to tell. And so that's only through, I'm very social and very love being with friends and love meeting people and hearing their stories. So oftentimes it's something I've experienced or witnessed or read or heard that will give me an idea. And then I'll, you know, keep that for a time when I can really explore it. I try not to think about it too much, but
Do you enjoy writing in groups or do you end up writing more solo? I've always been curious of what that is like, that sort of group writing experience. I was curious, do you have any experience doing that?
I don't. I tend to be very solitary in that endeavor. I do have, and that said, I like to, once I have an idea, I just like to lock in and write. And then I'm very maybe selfish that way. But I do rely very heavily on a few very good people in my life. My partner, Greg Hargart, my husband, who's also a singer-songwriter. He's a rock and roll musician, so he brings lots. And we work together. He's produced all of my work. So in terms of arranging and presenting it, he's definitely a key player. And my other partner in music is Jesse Brown, who is a fabulous composer and pianist. And so he and I collaborate, but it's usually, it's not like the two of us. We do get together often. We write every week, but he's very musical. And we come up with the idea together and then I go away and work on lyrics. So we're still working on that process and figuring out what that should look like.
Yeah. You were saying like you like to turn to poetry and literature. And do you have like favorite poets that you end up going back to or sort of favorite collections that you read from?
Yes and no. I mean, I have my favorite poets, but I've written, I guess it's obvious, William Butler Yeats, a W.B. Yeats. I inspired a song. I wrote the song Tread Softly based on a poem by W.B. Yeats. He wishes for the cloths of heaven. But it was just a very serendipitous thing. I happened to be reading it at the time. I didn't go delving to, you know, into poetry for that reason. I just find I love poetry. I read it often. And yeah. In my other life, I'm a high school English teacher, for many years, and it was a daily ritual that I would start each class with a poem of the day, just for fun and to expose, to just share, you know, beautiful words with beautiful people. So.
I love that you brought up Tread Softly, because that's probably one of my favorite songs of yours. I remember hearing it and then listening to it on, I think at the time I didn't even have Spotify. It wasn't even on Spotify or anything like that. I was listening to it on YouTube. I remember being in my room and listening to that on repeat on YouTube. And I wonder if you could tell more about that song and how that came to be.
Oh, that's one of those. I've been reading a bit lately about the creative process and how to delve into that process a lot quicker and to explore that. And that song just kind of came. I had a part of a melody in my mind and I just happened to be, it was a grade 11 poetry, you know, we were working on, and that poem I just had discovered, He Wishes for the Cloths of Heaven. And I loved that it was so simple, yet it said so much. And all of a sudden I got the, you know, I had the, well, not to get too cheesy, but I had like da 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 da, and I had that going like a loop through my head. I don't know where it was from, but all of a sudden the words just fit. And then I sat down and kind of tried to massage it a little bit more into what I had envisioned. But
when you're composing, do you often compose with a guitar in your hands?
Yes. I can play the guitar and I can accompany myself, but I don't consider I'm not trained in music at all. I regret I didn't take lessons. It was my uncle who taught me how to play a few chords on the guitar and got me going. But so I don't know. I find sometimes it could be tinkling around on the piano, which I don't play either, or a mandolin, which I have, but I'm learning how to play. I find that just, you know, trying different instruments will lead you down a different path too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but I usually with a guitar, yes.
As I've been talking with different artists in preparation for this series, it's been interesting. Like, everyone has their own instrument. And then Everyone has said so far, but I'm not trained on that instrument. It's just the one that I use. it seems to me that every songwriter, every composer has sort of one that they gravitate towards that makes them feel comfortable enough to sort of start to pluck out the melodies and figure out.
I think it was a workshop many years ago I heard. I think it was Rick Emmett, the Canadian guitar player. He was speaking and he said that he found that he was more, his guitar obviously is, his instrument is guitar, obviously. He's a master of guitar. And so he said he preferred to write on other instruments because he found it more freeing and liberating, because on the guitar, he knew the shapes that should go with other shapes and the chords. So he already had those preconceived notions where if you're just picking up a bouzouki and, you know, playing around on it or a piano and noodling a bit, you're not, you know, maybe, and I thought that was interesting. So there's maybe something to that as well.
Oh, that's really interesting. I like that. Well, do you have a favorite song so far that you have written, or I'm sure they're all like your children. what's the story behind a favorite song?
Well, I don't know if I have a favorite. I certainly love, you know, I love singing, and there's lots of songs that I love singing. My favorite song to sing would be Dougie MacLean's Caledonia. I've sung that for many years, and just a beautiful, beautiful anthem and song about, you know, home and feeling that belonging. And I love singing that song. As far as the ones I've written, I think a fun one is, I guess it has a kind of a neat story, is The River, which I released a couple of years ago. It was a canoe trip. I love the outdoors. And I went on a canoe trip with some colleagues from school. We took about 20 young people from the high school. We went on a canoe trip and we just had some crazy adventures and paddling up on the Churchill River. And so it was a lot of the imagery from that trip that really inspired the idea of that song, you know, about paddling and how that is, you know, the river of life. And not to get too carried away, but it just came to me. I had an idea and the imagery and tried to put it together into something that made sense. So I love that because I think of those images when I'm singing it too. So
yeah, like it connects you back to that memory.
That's right.
When you're writing a song or you're working on, you know, putting even like projects like putting together an album where you inevitably have deadlines that you have to meet, how do you handle writer's block? Or do you feel like that ever happens to you? Or and then do you ever feel like you're done writing a song, or do you end up tweaking it sort of to the point of recording it?
I think that you brought up a good point. I think I have a healthy relationship with deadlines. I feel like the writer's block comes when I don't have a deadline. I feel if you know, if you give me a deadline and say you need a song, then I'll come through for you in the 11th hour, you know. But I feel like, I don't know, again, I've been reading a lot about that recently, and just the discipline of, you know, forcing yourself to have these tighter deadlines to so that you feel like you've achieved something. I think it was on a really wonderful experience I had was Dean McNeil invited me. He is the head of the music department here, but he's also an accomplished musician himself and a wonderful he plays trumpet and is very involved with the jazz orchestra here in Saskatoon. And so he had sent me a note, as our paths had crossed before musically, but I, you know, a different world. I'm from the folk world. And he had offered an invitation to go to jazz composer's workshop. And so I had ignored the email because I thought, you know, he was casting a wide net to get participants. And then he finally phoned me and said, "You haven't answered my email. Are you interested?" And I thought, what would I have to offer, you know, a jazz composer's workshop? I mean, I'm not jazz and I don't think of myself as a composer in that way. And it was wonderful. It was life-changing. I mean, it was outside my comfort zone, but I learned so much and so many wonderful opportunities came from that. So at that meeting, David Braid, very accomplished pianist, was there as well. And I got to talk and hear him play. And I got to talk with him and we get chatting about the creative process. And he said something that stayed with me. He said, and so I want to give him credit. This is his. Talked about the paralysis of abundance. And he said, if you set me down in front of a piano and say, write something, he said, I'll just stare at that blank page forever. But if you set me down and say, compose a song in the key of F that has to do with bread, now you've set parameters that truly allows your creativity to go to work. You know, it's magic. So without those parameters, and I thought, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way. So I think deadlines are the same way. You know, if you have a focus and an idea and a deadline, you're set.
Absolutely. I mean, I find that with writing myself, like I I have to do a lot of writing. I'm in my PhD at the university. And so I do a lot of writing for that. And nothing gets me writing like a deadline. Like if I'm like, oh, I need to submit this on February 1st. I was like, I was writing every day. I had my ritual and I was like, I just pumped out some, you know, those words. But, you know, the 3 months prior, I was kind of like, da-da-da-da. Noodling around and I was like, oh yeah, I'll get to it. And I was like, oh, I really need to get to it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I'm really working in recent months. I'm really working hard at establishing a routine of, you know, to have a solid practice of getting up and writing and working and crafting and listening too. Mm-hmm. And like, so all the things you're asking me, I'm just discovering what is it I need to be more efficient or more effective or be a better writer or more prolific writer, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's exciting. And I'm grateful for that, the chance to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you can talk to it a little bit. You mentioned that you were a teacher and you've balanced this life of being a musician and a teacher. And I think I was 13 when I heard you first. And I listened to you at a concert and you said, you're like, in my other life, I'm a teacher. And I had really wanted to be, I'd always wanted to be a teacher, but I also wanted to be a musician. And I thought like, I'd have to choose both, or like, I could be a music teacher, but then I wouldn't get to perform and all of these things. And then I remember hearing you say that and it clicked. I was like, wait, I can do two things. Like it had never dawned on me. And I distinctly remember that concert. And and you were talking about, you know, your life as a musician and teacher. And I wonder if you could talk more about that and how that's looked and what has balance looked like for you in that sense.
Wow, that means a lot to me to hear you say that, because I always maybe said so apologetically, you know, like I've always wanted to be a teacher. I knew that. I love working with young people and I had the best gig ever. I was able to read poetry and stories and talk about them and talk about history and philosophy and art and try to inspire young people and try to help them find their passion in life. And then I came into music and I had recorded, I fell into a band and I loved it and I wanted to do more. And my band at the time were just at a different place in their lives and weren't wanting to, you know, quit their day job and go on the road. Right. And so I started working towards making a record, and I literally, the path took me there. Do you know what I mean? And I loved it so much that I followed the path as far as I could. And then I left my teaching job for about 7 years and I did music full time. And I think I just burned out, ran out of steam. And so I went back to teaching after 7 years and tried to do both. And I mean, I'm a person, if I'm in, I'm all in. So when I was teaching, it's 110% there. Yeah. But then, you know, I would still try to pursue projects that were exciting. So I got some wonderful opportunities closer to home. But again, I always felt like I couldn't go beyond the borders too far because I had my day job. And of course, my division were very supportive and allowed me some leaves. For example, I wrote music for a play and they gave me a leave so that I could be in the play and enjoy that experience as well. And then bring that experience back to the classroom and share it with my students. And so I was very, very fortunate in that I had division and colleagues who were supportive, and I was able to take advantage of those very exciting projects, mm-hmm. like performing with a symphony orchestra and writing music for a play and writing a commission for Saskatoon's first hospice. So really grateful, but still always inside yearning to go further to see how far, you know, what other adventures I could have. And so I retired from teaching a year ago, and I've been, like I said, working towards building a better writing practice and exploring that. I just want to really push that as far as I can. So I'm excited about seeing what I can do and learning more and being a better guitar player and maybe learning the mandolin and, you know, just fully exploring that. So I wanted to be a full-time artist, and that's why I left teaching last year and to really pursue this. As far as you said balance, and I just laughed because there's no such thing. It's just, you kind of go headlong into it and follow it with all of your passion.
Yeah. I once heard I think she's a business coach, Christy Wright, say like balance isn't 50-50 split, but being 100% wherever you are. And I was like, well, I kind of like that.
Oh, I like that.
She's like, wherever you are, it's like if you're, you know, she was talking about, she she talks mostly to like entrepreneurs, it can sort of feel like I've got this, right? All of the split focus. And she was saying like, just be 100% wherever you are, that's 100% on that task. And then you go move to something else. And so that's always what I think of when I think of balance now, because how do you balance being a musician and a, you know, and a friend and a spouse and a teacher and a, like all of the things that we have to do in a life.
That's right. Well, and again, it's a grateful for all of those wonderful things in life, right? And so you just, but you can certainly beat yourself up because you feel like you should be doing something somewhere else or being better at that. And so you're right. I think you're absolutely right to be kinder to yourself and be 100% where you are. But I like that.
I wonder if we can shift our focus to talking a little bit more about the symphony concert. What is it like to get to perform your music with an orchestra? I remember getting to hear you a few years ago with the SSO. And I was wondering, could you let us know what you'll be singing, or is it a secret?
Well, I'm excited to tell you, I'm going to sing Treads Softly for sure.
I'm excited.
I had the pleasure. There's so much to tell you. I just am so grateful because I never imagined in my wildest dreams that I would ever be on stage with the symphony orchestra. And it was, again, Dean McNeil and working with Alan Gilliland, another wonderful composer, who Alan arranged the songs, my songs for symphony. It's for the symphony orchestra. They were beautiful arrangements, and that was a dream come true to hear them produced and arranged in that with such a big sound. And just I'm a singer-songwriter, you know, it's me and a guitar and I'm very fortunate to be able to play with a band. So to step on stage with this huge wall of sound and just virtuosos in their respective fields, it was just a real gift. So it was a pleasure, and I was doubly blessed because I had my band with me on stage as well. So we all got to share in that moment. So it was pretty fantastic. So I'm very excited about the upcoming show, YXC Divas. It's going to be a very diverse night, a lot of range in the different styles of music. So I'm excited to see the show as well, as I'm just so lucky to be in it. I'm very excited.
What was it like? Like, sorry, hearing that the first time, did you hear it in tracks first from Alan, or did you, or like that sort of first rehearsal with the symphony was what, like the first time you heard everything together?
I heard, because we'd worked with Alan on arranging, because we were trying to, he was very sensitive to the fact that we wanted to incorporate the band, my band, and do what was right for each song. And we had a lot of fun. We was writing for the band and for the symphony orchestra and featuring the wonderful players in the symphony as well. So the first time I heard it was MIDI tapes that Alan had sent to me to kind of like, this is the direction we're going and how's it going? And I mean, that was amazing to hear it. And then the night of the rehearsal was, very moving.
I bet.
Very moving.
Well, I'm curious, sort of as we wrap up our conversation, do you have any advice for young singer-songwriters out there? Like, what kept you writing and recording music throughout your career?
I never would have believed you when I was in grade 11 or 12 that I'd ever, never mind, I never thought I'd be on stage singing, never mind performing with an orchestra, you know, and just follow your heart, follow your dreams, work hard, learn as much as you can. And if it's what's calling you, there'll be no stopping you, you know, just keep at it. And you just never know where it takes you, because I would never have believed you. And I pinch myself, you know, I'm just grateful. And I want to keep making music, and I want to learn and be a better writer. And so I just want to keep learning and keep meeting other musicians and playing with them and learning from them and just keep at it.
Amazing. Well, can you let us know, what are you working on now, and what's coming up next for you?
So I mentioned that I was teaching up until last year, and then I decided I needed to go full time into music. I have been keeping track for a number of years of different projects that I want to do. So I'm working on a record, a little EP of songs, the songs that I recorded for the play, that I wrote for the play.
Oh, wonderful.
So I would like to record those and give them a life. I would also like to record an Irish based album. I'm going to say this out publicly because then I'll be accountable for it. But I have about 3 or 4 projects, and so I want to continue writing, and I really am focusing right now on recording, trying to get more music out, release as singles and a couple of albums. So that's what I'm at right now.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, I look forward to hearing those as they release. Well, it's just been such a pleasure to chat with you. I have to tell you, I felt a little bit starstruck when I was like, oh, I get to talk to Eileen Laverty. Like, I've just been a really big fan of your music. It was very formative to me, even though like I mostly entirely live in the classical space. But if I'm listening to music, I always go to folk music. That's sort of where I feel happy. And so getting to speak with you has just been such a privilege. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. That means a lot to me. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, we're going to wrap up our chat with some rapid fire questions. No wrong answers. Just go with your gut. let's see what comes out. Can you point to a moment when you knew you wanted to be a musician?
Rapid fire. Sorry. no, I can't pinpoint one moment. I've always loved singing. And, it's just kept pulling me in this direction. And so
your desert island album,
that's a tough one. It would probably be Lynn Miles, something by Lynn Miles. I'm a huge fan. She's a lovely Canadian singer songwriter.
Amazing. Do you have a pre-performance ritual and what is it?
My band always tease me because I stretch like I'm going into a soccer final. I do a warm up and a stretch. I'm like, what are you doing? And I also sing Voodoo Thing by Colin James.
I love that so much.
It's a little out there.
If you could give a piece of musical advice to a fellow musician out there, what would it be?
I don't know. I don't stop. You know, the more you love music, the more music you love. Just keep at it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on Loud and Clear. Do you mind letting our audience know where they can find you? And I'll make sure that everything is linked and referenced in the show notes so that it's easy to access.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you. I am at www.eileenlaverty.com. I'm just revamping the website, but I'm there. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter and I guess X and Instagram. Find me on Instagram. And thank you very much, Olivia. This has been a real pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for coming on and talking with me. All right. And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Loud and Clear. I am just so thrilled that I get to bring the amazing talent from Saskatoon to my listeners at Loud and Clear. Loud and Clear is listened to across the globe. Currently, we have over 20 countries that tune in to Loud and Clear. So I'm just so excited that I get to introduce you to artists from my hometown that are really just doing amazing musical things. And please do yourself a favor and check out Eileen Laverty's track, Tread Softly. I will make sure that it is linked in the show notes. And I hope that you enjoy it as much as I do. Well, thank you so much for tuning in this week. Please remember to leave a podcast rating or written review. It really helps out our show. And remember to grab your tickets for the YXE Divas show with the SSO. You will also find it on ConcertStream if you want to live stream in to that performance. I will make sure that everything is linked below in the show notes. We'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.